I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. Today, we are joined by Justin Lee. He's an assistant professor of social work at Weber State University, along with Darren Carver, who's the associate clinical director at Weber Human Services. That's just north of Salt Lake in Weber County. And I need to kind of set this up. So I'm on my morning commute a couple of days ago, and I saw a lady who
You need to say that you're riding public transportation. Because my morning commute is much different.
That's it. I'm on a train. I guess I was going to get to that. I'm on light rail tracks. If you're in Chicago, it's the L. If you're in New York, it's the subway. Or the tube if you happen to be in London. So my point, though, is I'm on the train. There's a lady, late 20s, early 30s, fairly attractive woman, actually, who was – I want to note that other than what I'm about to tell you about her, she looked pretty normal. But she was having what was obviously a manic episode. And by that is she is talking to herself rather loudly, and she is nervously pacing up and down the train car just constantly. I mean, she would go to her back to her seat. She'd stand there. She puts her stuff in a bag. She'd take off her jacket, put it back on, you know, and she's just doing all of this back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. So I'm thinking to myself, I don't know what exactly is going on with her. However, being in an environment we're in here in Utah, that can be kind of upsetting to people. I'm from Chicago. Been watching that for 40, 50 years. I saw the first person I saw talking to themselves when I was in junior high school, right? So it's not a thing. But she particularly was, just because she was so high manic, I was concerned about her. So I think to myself, what I don't want to do is call the police, because I've seen too many instances where they're trained to stop crime or intervene in that way, and conflict resolution not necessarily what they're trained to do. So I don't want to put them in a bad situation. I certainly don't want anything to escalate to have this lady get hurt. So I call what is 211, which in Utah is a way to find social services. It's a great tool that I hope catches on like 911 has for emergencies. But when I call, I'm disappointed to find that they don't have anything set up to deal with situations like this. Now, I don't know what happened to this woman, because eventually she got off of the train. But if you would have seen her, you would know that she was not right, and that potentially something could escalate when she got next to somebody, or, you know, God forbid, she came in contact with a police officer on the transit. Or somewhere else.
Or just someone who didn't recognize it as a mental health issue,
yeah. Right? It could be bad. So what I wanted to do was talk to some folks who understand these kinds of situations and find out how in communities, because this is happening everywhere in America and around the world, because mental health, to at least as I've become an adult, has become more mainstream, that we know a little bit more about it.
But we're talking about it. It's always been here. We've just been talking about it.
But what we're doing about it is what I want to try to get to.
Yeah.
So I am going, as I sit here and face Professor Lee, I want to say, Justin, knowing, and we talked about this a little bit offline yesterday, what do you do in a situation like that, and what can be done to help those kind of folks?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it quite a bit since we had that conversation, and I'd be really interested to hear Darren's take too. I'm a little bit removed. I have a private practice that's small that I work with folks, you know, individually, and there are certainly people who are in the community that may be able to talk a little bit more about that. But the thing I kept coming back to was, when people see that. People can feel unnerved. People can, question what's going on. But I think it's important to recognize that this person isn't necessarily asking for help or support in that moment. And I think it's okay to give people some space to be experiencing whatever they're going through. It's okay. Like, it's okay to let them have their self-determination, their space. Mm-hmm. In that moment, there are other situations where you definitely should speak up and say something. And maybe we'll talk more about that.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to switch to you. So, Darren, in that situation, obviously I didn't do anything. I mean, I didn't intervene. But I still believe, and I stand by this, having been a witness to it, that there are times when somebody might have been able to help her kind of work her way through the situation that she was going through.
Sure. Yeah. No, I mean, I appreciate what Justin's saying, and there are times when it's difficult to distinguish. You know enough to recognize that you use the phrase a manic response, or she was in a manic phase, and I think that people don't always recognize that it is something happening from a mental health crisis standpoint. You clearly did. And what you said that I think is really important is this cuts across all classes, races, ethnicities. We sometimes have a preconceived idea about who experiences these kinds of things. There isn't any type of person. This can happen to anyone. Physical health problems can happen to anyone. Behavioral health problems can happen to anyone. And I would say in that situation, if she's not presenting as a threat to anyone, she's not yelling at somebody or threatening, it's absolutely okay to say, can I do anything for you? Can I help you with something? Can I call someone for you? And they may just tell you no. I do want to come back to the police situation, but that conversation can lead to something that sometimes is productive. And so I think we're afraid to engage. If you notice that she was having a serious health problem, I think we tend to act more quickly and we're not afraid to speak up. But with behavioral health, sometimes I think we're so worried about making it worse. Now there are situations where somebody could be threatening, and definitely we want to be cautious about that. And that leads me back to kind of what you shared about, do I call 911? And what if the police respond? Will they make it worse? I think we've seen lots of things on the news about situations where police officers have indeed made some situations worse. But there are a lot of situations we never hear about where police come in, and there's a movement nationally called crisis intervention teams, and this is training for police officers in how to respond to mental health crises. I've been involved in that locally. I've spent quite a bit of time in these week-long trainings with police officers, and it's very hands-on where situations are created and they have to use the tools that they've been shown to respond to people. So the police at times are getting some training, but we'll want to talk at some point when you feel like this is a good time about mobile crisis outreach teams. These are beginning to happen nationally. They're happening locally for here us here in Utah. But mobile crisis outreach teams are really what we want to see happen in those situations in the future.
We got about a minute to go, so Amy.
Yeah, I guess I've had a variety of experiences with this, and I'll talk about one that I have a question about in after we take a break. But in just a very quickly, Darren, I guess the other question I had is, I've actually been threatened in this situation, and I have not called police, but I find that if I sort of don't look at them in the eye, I mean, like just physically, are there some things you can do to just really get out of the situation really quickly?
Yeah, I think you've got to be wise that way. And don't try and, connect with them in some way when they're threatening, whether it's eye contact or, moving towards the person. You just want to kind of step away. And in those situations, 911 is the right thing.
And I do think that, and maybe we can talk about this after the break, Jason, but I wonder if we are more educated and we recognize mental health issues, or even there's disability issues. I mean, you have people, one of the things I want to talk about is what happened to a friend of mine who's autistic. And I wonder if we're more educated when we call for help or when we report something or when we talk about something, then police come into it knowing, or whoever comes, or the mobile crisis, whoever comes in, they come into this really knowing this isn't just a jerk. This is a person who is really struggling and needs some help.
When we come back, we'll continue our discussion. You're listening to Voices of Reason.
It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLPodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
We are back with the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason, Amy Donaldson, Jason Lee, speaking today about mental health and how our community can help those who need help when it is appropriate. I had an experience on public transit when I was coming into work earlier this week, and I saw a person who was having a manic episode, not harming anybody, and as it turns out, eventually I wasn't able to do anything, but I thought to myself, it'd be nice to have somebody who could see if this person was in a situation that could potentially escalate in a way that would be bad. But again, I'm no expert, so I was not about to intercede, and I just didn't want anything bad to happen to this person. So we've been speaking today with Justin Lee, who's an assistant professor of social work at Weber State University, along with Darren Carver, who's the associate clinical director at Weber Human Services. So Amy had a wanted to start back with what we were talking about earlier. How do we help?
Yeah, I just wondered, like, are there things that we could do? And I don't know, Darren, you want to start? And then Justin, you can tell us from your perspective. What can we do as the public to get, if we do call for help, if you do call 911 or you do call 211, you're giving information that is helpful to whoever's going to respond?
Yeah, so first of all, I think it's important to know that there's a national crisis line that will connect you to wherever you are locally, and that's 1-800-273-TALK. So if you were uncertain, you could call that number and have a conversation with somebody who could perhaps walk you through that. The other thing that you can look for in your communities, there is something called mental health first aid. You can take a mental health first aid class. A lot of people don't know about that. But that can be a way to really inform yourself about how to respond. The other thing that's important to know is that in July of 2022, there will be nationally a new number to call rather than 911, and that's 988. The 988 system is set to come on in July of 2022, and it is specific to having mobile crisis teams and police respond to a situation fully aware that this is a mental health circumstance. So I don't know if I answered your question completely with some of that information, but that's what I can do currently to kind of learn about how to respond to some of these situations.
I love that this is coming online. So at least we know that this situation is being addressed. And it's great to know that the proper resources are being put in place to help.
I think if you do need to call the police, if there is something threatening going on, that it can be helpful to give as much information as possible. Let the dispatcher know, like, I think this is a mental health issue, and reiterate that. That's information that can be really helpful for people coming onto the scene, and they may send an ambulance as opposed to police. Directly,
so. Okay, so Justin, like I was saying before, though, is it sort of like if you see somebody, I mean, I gave as much description as I could, and I tried to make it, obvious that I didn't feel like they were a danger. So are we talking about, like, again, if you see somebody hurt someplace, you kind of describe what you can see and then expound as much as you can?
Yeah, and it, you don't necessarily have to extrapolate or interpret what's going on. You can describe exactly what's going on. And, you know, don't you wouldn't necessarily want to guess at if they seem dangerous. Just describe what you're seeing. Mm-hmm. And I think it will give people a heads up.
I think I was just going to add, I think one thing that people do is they speak from their emotions in the moment. Okay, so I walk around downtown a lot. And I've been yelled at. I had some guy say, I know you're following me. You work for the FBI and I'm going to get you. And so I quickly went in a store. But I understand that it's not personal, that they're not angry at me. But it does elicit some fear. And I just wonder, like as I've dealt with it, I've seen it so many times. It's been so common downtown or when we go to parks that I've. And also, like, we serve meals on holidays as a family. We've seen some of that there. I have learned, like, if I can sort of keep that fear of mine in check or that I feel threatened, then it doesn't – which only – the only reason I did was, you know, I have kids with me and I don't want them to be afraid. I think that anything we do out of that emotional – and I just wondered your thoughts on that, the sort of how people can – manage that in the situation.
Yeah. Well, go ahead, Darren.
I was just going to add, you know, I think you're bringing up a great point here, and that is that, and Justin kind of addressed this earlier, but the fact that I'm having mental illness symptoms doesn't necessarily mean that there's a crisis, right? Mm. And I think that defining something where you're concerned enough to say, I think this person may be a threat to themselves or others, or their behavior so erratic that they could do something that might truly injure someone else or threaten someone else. That it's a hard line to distinguish, but in being around people who are experiencing mental health symptoms, again, I think we interact with them in a way that fits the situation. You walking away from a person who's yelling at you, telling you that you're following them, I think is an appropriate response. And yet that probably doesn't reach the level of saying, gosh, somebody ought to call the police, right? Or dial 911.
I think it's also, it can be helpful to take that opportunity to talk to whoever you're with too. Mm-hmm. Like if I'm with my kids and I see that, I may say something like, oh, it looks like they're, you know, maybe struggling with something. Mm-hmm. And that's okay.
Well, and I think that's a hard thing. I remember we had an incident at a Christmas where a guy just decided I was a bad guy. I don't know. And I think it happens a lot to women because there were not a lot of women in the little area there where I was. But he just fixated on me and like it was a little bit of an issue. But the people running the shelter dealt with it. And then I talked to my kids about it who were pretty worried about it. But I said, you know, and their question to me was one that has bothered me since. And that was my youngest daughter said, why don't we help them? Like if they're homeless and they have mental health problems, why can't we help them? Because if you help them, then maybe you could not be homeless. And I think that's maybe been something that's really bothered me is like, at what point, not every person with mental health issues is homeless, but it seems pretty debilitating in some cases. And like, how do we do this? What do we need to be doing and lobbying for and hoping for in our public policies?
Right. Yeah. And I think that's the real issue is we're talking about dealing with responding to people who are in the, you know, in the depths of this and maybe have been dealing with it for a decade or more. And the real conversation is, when can we detect this much earlier before the person becomes homeless? And then get them a quality of treatment that changes the trajectory of their symptoms so that they don't end up in that situation. And that's the real, I think, place of advocacy. It's not just access to mental health services early, it's access to quality mental health services early. And we can throw money at this problem, but without a good plan of delivering treatments that work, that have been proven to reduce these kinds of symptoms and change the trajectory of mental illness over the course of time, we're going to continue to see higher and higher levels of these problems.
What I want to do is, we got to listen a minute, so I don't want to start a new topic, but I know that there's this circumstance where I hope that we, the public, can become more educated and informed about what we see. So rather than having the emotional response that become upset, we watch this. Just as if you saw somebody who was injured somehow, you would, you know, pause a little bit, see what can I do to help, rather than be upset about the kind of behavior you're watching, because again, you feel like it's out of sorts, it may be threatening. But if we can come from it from a point of view as trying to figure out a way to help the situation as a mental health episode rather than as some, you know, potentially violent interaction, then we find our way to helping these people in a way that is productive for them and for our society. We'll continue with our discussion. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, Voices of Reason, speaking today about mental health and mental illness, how our communities, how our society can better understand it and be able to be more proactive in helping mitigate what is becoming, what has always been, and we didn't want to recognize it, an issue in our communities. And I remember learning back in the 80s when there used to be a lot more, apparently, mental health services provided, and then our federal government kind of cut that back. So it's been a struggle since then to try to, you know, now that more of these people are out among us and we see them, how do we learn to deal with that? We have today, we're speaking with Darren Carver. He's the Associate Clinical Director at Weber Human Services. And we also have with us Justin Lee, Associate Professor of Social Work at Weber State University. So Amy has a certain circumstance that I would like her to kind of describe to us. And then when we come back after that, after she finishes telling that story, Darren, I want to get your take on it. And then obviously as well, you, Justin.
Yeah. So for my daughter and her wife are fostering. There's a foster program for adults with disabilities. And I think it's like a combination federal state program. And so my daughter-in-law, Tanya, actually worked in the program, and this young man needed a new place to live, and they get along great. So he lives with them now, and he loves to play at the park, and they go probably.
How old is he?
He's 24, okay. 6'7", wonderful kid. He's delightful, and I have enjoyed having him in our lives more than I can say. I thought my kids were crazy. My daughter's, you know, 27 years old, and I thought this is a big responsibility, but it has been an absolute gift. I love him. So he loves to play at the park. So they go, I don't know, 2, 3, and sometimes almost every night to play at a nearby park. They have some rules for him about how he can engage with kids, because he is not always aware of his physical stature versus, you know, what do you want? He loves Legos, you know. So they have some ways to engage in the world with, and they've talked with him about that, and he has been A+. The other night, as it was nearing dark, there were some kids playing, and he was playing there as well with them and also by himself. And my daughter-in-law had a man walk up to her and say, "Hey, do you have kids here on the playground?" And she said, I have a friend here. What's the matter?" And he said, "Well, this, guy over here, he's crazy and he's chasing the kids and we've got to do something about him." And she said, "No, he's fine. He's just playing. He's fine." She regrets not saying, like, "He's with me," you know, because she didn't think of it. Like, you don't, like, I have.
I'm shocked that she didn't think of it, honestly. This does not make sense to me.
But I think for a lot of us, like, we're not used to confrontation. Like, we're journalists. Like, we've had a million confrontations.
She's with a guy who's 6'7" in a playground.
Yeah.
She has to know that is going to raise red flags for her.
No, but I think that's sort of my point in bringing this story up, is that there are people who, she's from Australia. This is not, she doesn't think about, like, she doesn't think, the first thing that she thinks is, oh, this is weird. And one of the issues I have had lately is, why is there one standard of behavior that we're all trying to adhere to, right? Like, why do you have to sit in your seat quietly on the train? Like, is that, who decided what the standards of behavior are? And why do we have to be, quote unquote, normal? Because I see how much our lives have been enriched by Austin and the way he sees the world and the way he interacts, that I'm like, well, you know, I don't know that normal should be this. Like, I understand. But anyway, this guy threatened him. He told the kids on the playground not to play with them. And I'm sure he thought, like you did, this is weird. There's this guy at the playground,
it's
whatever.
It's not that I thought it's weird. It's just that I
but
realized.
If you walked up, you would think it's weird, you know. So, but she did not recognize that this is a situation that would alarm a father. She did not recognize that. And it's a lesson to me in like how we've been indoctrinated about what's okay and what's not okay. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on like that. I really think if we interacted with people in general more open-mindedly and kind, that we might really have a different experience with the world. But that's just my two cents.
Yeah, it makes me think of, you know, the way that we approach the world is we tend to see things as a threat and define things as, you know, within our sphere of control or what's predictable and what's without. And I think a mental health crisis or a mental health, you know, diagnosis or mm-hmm. a mental illness that we
or neurodivergent issues, right? Yeah. Like which are often yeah. mistaken for mental health issues, and they're not. They're just neurodivergent.
Yeah, and I do think it makes life really interesting, but we have to be able to be curious. We have to be able to say, well, what's going on? Like, is there anything inappropriate going on? Is there anything like start from a position of being curious and ask some of those questions and observe.
Hi, who are you here with?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, why is it? I think that we've become a condition to this idea that like, you can't be at a park if you don't have a kid playing. You know, I don't know. But maybe that's a good, I don't know. What are your thoughts, Darren?
No, I like what Justin said about being curious. And, you know, we're talking about sometimes developmental issues versus, mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And there is a difference, and that curiosity can help. I think the situation that was talked about earlier about this woman on the train, mm-hmm. most mental health symptoms are, you know, unpleasant, and they create mm-hmm. in us a sense of distress. And so if it's not just that their behavior is somehow out of compliance with what we would expect on a train, it's that you can sense and see the distress that this person's in. And again, I think the idea of saying, you know, it seems like you're going through a difficult time. Can I do something to help you? Is okay when you see that person in distress from their mental health symptoms.
What do you do? So Jason gave an example where the woman was basically not hurting or bothering anyone or herself. But I saw a video on Twitter of a guy trying to jump out of a window of a moving bus. And a couple of guys on the bus tried to keep him in. And they're yelling at the bus driver to stop. And they're trying to pull the guy back in. He's clearly having a mental health episode. He was raging and he tried to spit on the people who were trying to save him from jumping out of the bus. And somebody shared it and said, New York is nuts or something like that. And a lot of people in the thread said, this is a mental health issue and we are in a mental health crisis. And you need to start looking at these things for what they are. And I mean, in a situation like that, where you're trying to keep someone from jumping out of a window, like, I think that's the 911, you know, situation, don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, you're right. And they end up, having this guy respond to them negatively, but in a lot of ways it's possible they saved his life.
Mm-hmm. It's, God, that just seems so scary. Both of those. So, okay, look at these two situations, right? The one with the older kid, the 24-year-old, that's really big.
Austin.
You know, what I was really more concerned about is I felt like the lady who was Tanya.
Yeah.
She wasn't protecting him. And because he wasn't doing anything bad. And he could have been a parent of one of these kids and all of that. So I felt like, I don't understand. I know you gave the explanation she's from Australia. I don't that doesn't make
sense. No, but I just think it's the way
illogical for me.
Yeah, but everyone doesn't think like us.
No, I get
sadly.
It. I get it.
We've been covering terrible things for too long.
It's true, and I'm a cynic. But this gentleman trying to get off the bus through the window. That is, it's tragic. Even if you pull him in, because it still hasn't. It has saved him from himself, but it hasn't addressed his major issue. And we as a society have to be a part of that and help be a part of helping him so that he doesn't have these situations occur to him. Unless we got a little less than a minute.
Okay. Yeah. I just was going to come back to something Darren had said before. Just that, you know, we're talking about these instances when they've gotten to the point of crisis or, you know, somebody experiencing these symptoms that are distressing to us. And, you know, if we can back up, like it's way more likely that we're going to have a colleague experiencing depression. It's way more likely that somebody's going to be struggling with anxiety or suicidal ideation or, you know, these kind of things. And so if we have a support system around us that keeps people from getting to the point where they have nobody and they're on the train and they have nobody to call and they're trying to, you know, get off a bus. Like this is already to the point of a crisis in some of these situations. And if we can, you know, have a support system involved much earlier in people that we're familiar with, then I think that might be a good place to begin.
When we come back, I want to talk about in the last segment potential solutions for this and how we can move forward. You're listening to Voices of Reason. Jason Lee, Amy Donaldson, Voices of Reason. And today we are speaking about mental health in our society and how we can become a better society by helping those people who have mental health issues and see it as a public health matter rather than
a private thing.
A private
thing.
And,
yeah.
And then sometimes we wait till the crisis happens and then we involve the wrong kinds of things. Because we waited too long and we haven't done preventative measures like you would do going to your doctor. You know, you should have a mental health checkup the same way you have a physical checkup. So speaking today with Professor Justin Lee, he's an associate professor of social work at Weber State University, as well as Darren Carver. He's the associate clinical director at Weber Human Services. And just kind of to this point, and I want to start with you, Darren, are we going in the direction, and it seems so that with you talked about the potential, the 988 system coming on in mid next year to help with mental health services and, you know, some of the other national resources like 800-237-TALK. How are we moving forward with maybe seeing mental health as part of the overall health system?
I think those two pieces that you talked about, our response to crisis situations, we're definitely moving in the right direction with understanding mobile crisis outreach teams. These are mental health professionals who co-respond with law enforcement and really lead the intervention and get people to the right setting based on the mental health crisis they're addressing. The flip side of that coin that you're talking about is we're doing a lot of talking now about physical health and mental health integration, but we are far from it. And we're working currently to insert a mental health therapist into a pediatric clinic. So the pediatricians are screening for behavioral health problems just the way they might screen for other physical health or developmental challenges for children who are coming into the pediatric clinic. And so I think we're talking about it. There are some steps in that way, but no, I think we're far from seeing behavioral health and physical health on equal terms. Yeah, we're just not there.
Well, yeah. Do you think it'll ever, Justin, do you think it'll ever be not optional? You know, that mental health will be part of just healthcare. We'll just think of it as, you know, we do other physical.
Well, there have been steps that have moved us in the right direction, and one is just being able to talk openly about it and being able to ask somebody how they're doing in the same way. My daughter broke her leg about a month and a half ago, mm-hmm. and there are people there to help immediately, take her to the emergency room. Like, there are people responding. And so, like, reducing a stigma around you know, these experiences and being able to respond, I think would be great. Like people
yeah.
see.
Does it give you heartburn when you see these high profile, like athletes that are saying, I'm having a mental health crisis. I don't want to participate in this event. That people are publicly critical? Does that give you heartburn?
Well, I think the fact that people are willing to talk about it takes a whole lot of courage because it's not super mainstream at this point, but it's getting there. And we're seeing sort of the statistics and the trends of people that experience depression or anxiety, for instance. The numbers are creeping up, and it's not likely that they're a whole lot more depressed people or anxious people. It's that people are willing to talk about it or seek some help or talk about it with their primary care physician,
I know,
for instance. But
when we were growing up, we used to call these people crazy, right? So right away, that's a stigma. And we didn't – at the time, we just weren't evolved. And I would say it was wrong then and it's wrong now to take mm-hmm. that point of view, because we know that mental illness is real and these people are – they need help the same way, like you said, your daughter did. And when I tore my Achilles tendon, I don't need people criticizing me for
playing
saying
basketball at your age.
Right. You shouldn't be playing racquetball, because that's how I did it. Right. So but as a kid, you know, she should be playing. Sometimes the accidents happen. We just have to change our attitudes.
And I agree. I think, too, we've got to be careful about, and I see this happening as we talk more and more about mental illness, and mental health problems, we tend to lump it all into the same mm-hmm. category. Anxiety is a normal experience for most people. You're going to feel anxious or worried sometimes. The question is, when does it reach a level where it's becoming debilitating? It's interfering with my ability to function. And you know, I see us. I've been seeing billboards come up, and you may have seen them too, and I think they're well-intended, but these billboards will say, this is suicide prevention, and it will show, you know, somebody with their arm around another person or talking to that person. And that's great, and we do want to show compassion and do that, but anyone who's lost a loved one to suicide sees that same billboard and thinks, gosh, I just probably didn't love that person enough. Mm-hmm. And that's... suicide is a complex issue, mm-hmm. and it's by the mental illnesses that we're talking about are biologically driven, and we do need mm-hmm. to see this in the same way we see physical health problems, but we've got to talk about it in the right way as well.
Can you, Darren, expound on that a little bit? You say it's a biological problem.
Yeah, we understand that physiologically something is happening. The brain is the most complex organ in the body. We are just barely coming to understand better how the brain relates, what's happening from a biological standpoint, a chemical standpoint in mental illness. Some of the medicines that we use, we're not even 100% sure how they work. We know they have an effect, but... we just need to see this again as not a matter of willpower or just being strong. Mental illness is not about that. It's a much deeper problem associated with what's happening inside the body.
And it's not a like a moral failing either.
Right. Yeah.
And I think a lot of people see it that way, or you know, they recognize some of these symptoms that maybe aren't mental health related, and finding a way to distinguish between like when is it a more serious problem. But
yeah.
Your doctor, you wouldn't find it strange for your doctor to say, you know, how are things going at home, or like how are things going, you know, if you
at your job.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to see, we actually interviewed somebody on the podcast years ago about having a clinic in their building,
mm-hmm.
and it was like, you know, to deal with the time it takes to go to the doctor. And you wouldn't lose work time because you could go down to the clinic. And one of the things I was really impressed with was when they added the mental health component. Our company said you could go to get mental health help for 3 sessions, which doesn't seem like a lot. But I will tell you that when I was covering COVID and writing about people who were dying and then the race issues every single day, I ended up having to go in. And I used the 3 sessions and I extended after that, you know, went through our insurance. But it saved me from really spiraling, because I probably would have just said like, oh, I don't have time to find a counselor. And, you know, the program was very designed to get you into And out of crisis, into the system and out of crisis. And I just don't know what we could do more of other than educating ourselves, understanding that there's not, you know, one standard of behavior. And then really, I think memorizing these numbers that Darren gave at the beginning of the show. And I am very interested in that mental health first aid class, because I think it is, we aren't just talking about it. Like, I do think there is some aspect of this that is more prevalent. And so I think we need to be more educated so that we don't make a situation worse, whether we call the police or we handle it poorly.
Well, unfortunately, we kind of run out of time on this, but I want to say thank you to Darren and to Justin for offering great insights and giving us, you gave me some hope. And I,
and just remember those numbers, 1-800-273-TALK and 988, which will be up mid-year next year, you said, Darren?
Yes, sorry. July of 2022.
Well, looking forward to that, because that would have helped me greatly on my train ride in. Join us again for the next episode of the Loudmouth Project's Voices of Reason. If you have any comments about the show, please contact us via email at voramed@gmail.com or at vorjasonl@gmail. You can also find us on Twitter at adonsports and at jasonlee1. Our show's Twitter handle is at @VORpodcast. You can check out our Facebook page and also find and subscribe to free episodes of our podcast on any of the places where you might find interesting content, Google Podcasts or Apple, and other places like that. Be sure to review our show as well, and we'd love to get your feedback, and it helps us grow our audience. Until next time, I'm Jason Lee, along with Amy Donaldson. When you engage in passionate debate, do your best to keep your dialogue civil. Try to be the voice of reason. Voices of Reason is a production of the Loudmouth Project.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.